fuck you! Australia! Germany! Africa!
Here we go. Head On with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Pycod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! Broadcasting live via bubblegum and bailing wire bandwidth, this is The Horn. HeadOnRadioNetwork.com is where we live, and that is where you go if you would like to jump into the chat room and be part of the multimedia live real-time madcap zany extravaganza that is The Horn chat during the portions of the day during which this program is live. Just go to HeadOnRadioNetwork.com, click on chat room, pick yourself out a screen name and a password, behave yourself, and jump right in, and you will be welcome right at home. Yes, indeed, you will be met by Anatole, Hoghead, Jugapunch, Jules, Laborman, and longtime inveterate, indefatigable veteran chat room moderator, Sparky, who, being a third stage guild navigator, has folded space as autumn draws near to become Man Cave. Yes, they're all there. More will be there as well for your conviviality and neighborliness and community-oriented conversation. Indeed, indeed, indeed. Hi, I'm Bob Kincaid, and yes, this is day two of broadcasting on bubblegum and bailing wire, otherwise known as metered bandwidth. It's actually kind of quick. It's just kind of brutally expensive, so we've got that. But we're here. You're there. I'm here, and as well, it's a program, which is kind of awesome. At least I think so. Yeah. Let me give you a quick update before we get going too much in earnest. After approaching a month of a harrowing search for someone to take a medical situation seriously, I'm happy to report that our eldest daughter, Agnes and mine, our eldest daughter is no longer the proud owner of a gallbladder. That's right, all the women in this merry little tribe are now running around cholecystless. Yet another, and the same doc has done them all. He's got like a collection. But hopefully our eldest daughter will be feeling considerably better now that it was just toxic-ish, just nasty. Yeah. So, she is home. She is resting uncomfortably because, despite the fact that it was done laparoscopically, it's still not particularly comfortable. It's just not nice when you get cut open. But it went quite well, and I sat there with her as she came out from under the anesthesia. And I'm just happy to report she's home, where Agnes has begun to fuss over her and take care of her and fluff her pillows and that sort of thing. Yes. So thank you all for your kind and warm thoughts. Hopefully, But see, just a note, hillbillies apparently are not supposed to have gallbladders. In places where there's a lot of mountaintop removal, gallbladder surgery is through the roof. Two of our daughters lost their gallbladders before they were 16 years old. Mm-hmm. Agnes lost hers before she was 45. And now our eldest, before she was 30. Generally speaking, it's not supposed to work that way. But it's one of those little, and you know, it's kind of like the appendix. For something so trivial and largely pointless, it can cause a hell of a lot of trouble. But it's not, my dad, who never had to put up with being around any mountaintop removal, but who, you know, worked around all sorts of toxins, what have you. You know, he had his out when he was 78, 75, 74, something like that. My mother never had hers out. Yeah, you get the idea. So there's that, which is a relief, to say the very least. And thank you all for your very kind thoughts. And another announcement, and this is not at all easy. I got a reminder late last night that ours really is, it's a community. But it is a community of real, fragile human beings. From time to time, you may recall me sharing with you emails from Kim in New York City. We've got a number of New York City listeners, but the ones I think of most, because I hear from them the most, in that city which never sleepeth, are Steve, and of course our good friend Pterodactyl from RepublicanDirtyTricks.com, who has been my personal tour guide on the couple of times I've been up to New York. Brandon from Brooklyn, who is a longtime supporter of this program, and the aforementioned Kim in New York City. You might recall a couple of years back that I got a note from Kim saying that she had just gotten married and asking me to play a particular song in celebration of the nuptials. She and Matthew would listen to the program most every evening. And they enjoyed it tremendously. Matthew in particular loved the conversations with Sandra and Mr. Stress. And so it was that late last night, I got a note from Kim in New York City. And it just hit me like a ton of bricks. Because, like I said, it was a reminder of just how fragile we are. She wrote, "I'm not sure if you remember, but the evening before my wedding in 2013, I emailed you and requested that you play Here Comes the Sun in honor of my then soon-to-be husband, Matthew. You, of course, played it and wished us all the best. Well, I'm writing you in despair, as Matthew died suddenly last Sunday, the 21st, at the age of 48. There are no words to describe how Matthew's death has left me devastated. Matthew was a fierce progressive, a man of integrity, extremely opinionated, and had an ebullient spirit. He brought joy to my life and made me laugh every day. I wanted you to know that Matthew and I spent many an evening listening to you while we just did stuff around our apartment. He was my soulmate, and it was wonderful that we were able to enjoy your show together. Thank you for giving us that gift. And Kim says, and now I ask you, Bob, do you have any words on how to cope with a broken heart? I can't stop crying. And that's the part where I started. Because that little moment in 2013 where, you know, it was just something as simple as playing Here Comes the Sun was a moment of shared joy. And it is a reminder to me that, while we don't brag or boast about how many millions of people listen to this program, I am privileged beyond expression at the degree to which you invite me and the rest of the community into your lives each and every day. And I am diminished, and we are all diminished, by Matthew's sudden passing. In another note, Kim added, Matthew loved your program so much, and it became a tradition during the 5.5 years of our relationship to listen to your show every evening. And he became very fond of many of the Horn community who would take part in the show. Kim said, this is without a doubt the most difficult time in my life, and knowing that you all care and that you're out there is a great comfort to me. And I wish we could be all of us, not me and that mouse in my pocket, but all of us. I wish we could be of greater comfort. But on behalf of this entire little community congregation, please know that our hearts are with you, Kim. And you have our most profound sympathy and condolences, shared grief, and our love. And as you traverse your own agonies, feel free to reach out and share, and feel free to talk about how you're feeling and make this little conversation that takes place 3 hours a night a place where you can savor memory and recall happiness and hopefully transit your grief. You are in our thoughts, Kim. So, that having been said, I think it only fitting that we go forward with why it is that Kim and Matthew both enjoyed what happens here so much. Fearless, progressive conversation, intelligent conversation, occasional wittiness, mostly from y'all, not from me. I'm not necessarily the witty guy. But it is, and I would be remiss if I did not note, it is Tuesday, the 20th day of September, 2016. That means it's Titanic Tuesday on the Horn. You might recall that Titanic Tuesday is so named in honor of something that happened on right-wing radio in America's fifth smallest radio market, Beckley, West Virginia, some several years back. It was just another morning, as one of the most profound monotones in American broadcast history took to the airwaves, and his 17 right-wing listeners, and took a break from reading the newspaper to his knuckle-breathing, mouth-walking followers. Took a break from it to take a call. Hello, caller. You're on the air. I mean, there was more vocal range in, you know, lurch on the Adams family. At which point the question was posed to him, Steve, how come it is there is seashells in the rocks in West Virginia? We ain't nowhere near the beach. To which he responded, well, caller, that's because of the movement of the Titanic plates. Mm-hmm. Utterly oblivious to the howling mistake he had just made. Still no word whatsoever on the movement of the Titanic wooden Caesar salad bowl. No. But it has thus become a day for celebrating what passes for intellect in the American right wing, white wing. And mercy sakes alive, we got them in rich abundance. The most obvious one being that, let's have a quick look at the Spawn O Benito Cheeto. Namely, in to wit, Ivanka Trump, which just sounds kind of dirty when you say it that way, and her brother Donald J. Trump Jr., millionaire, who owns a mansion and a yacht and a plane and a dirigible and helium-filled pants and lots and lots and lots of fop hairdressing, you can tell when you, yeah. Definitely not a Dapper Dan man. Mm-mm. So, Ivanka Trump. Oh, Ivanka shot a tequila. Was scheduled to do a phone interview the other day with the hard-hitting journalists from Cosmopolitan magazine. No, really. You know, Cosmopolitan, that has lead articles every month, that goes something like this: all men are scum, and how to catch one for yourself. That hard-hitting journalism. So, Prachi Gupta was the reporter, and she had a phoner, which also sounds kind of dirty, and I don't mean it to sound that way, but she had a phone interview with Ivanka Trump to talk to her about some of her daddy's, of course that's the wrong accent, but it's the philosophically and spiritually, my daddy's rich, you want a beer? Somehow you can almost see Ivanka Trump just, you know, all gussied up on game day down in an SEC football contest with her little sorority pin and all that shit. Prachi Gupta was asking her about her her daddy's welfare plan, which I'm sure is not the accent that Prachi Gupta works with either. Probably sounds like a New Yorker. And so Prachi Gupta wanted to know if her daddy, if Benito Cheeto's child care plan would apply to male same-sex couples, because there are male couples who are taking care of children. Ivanka responded saying, "The policy is fleshed out online, so you can go see all the elements of it. But the original intention of the plan is to help mothers in recovery in the immediate aftermath of childbirth." And so, being trained as a journalist, even though she was writing for Cosmopolitan, Prachi Gupta followed up. She said, "I just want to be clear that for same-sex adoption where the two parents are both men, they would not be receiving special leave for that because they don't need to recover or anything." And Ivanka Trump said, "Those are your words, not mine. Those are your words. The plan right now is focusing on mothers, whether they be in same-sex marriages or not." And then she brought up something that the Prachi Gupta did Benito Cheeto had said back in 2004 when he said, "Birth is a wonderful thing for the woman. It's a wonderful thing for the husband. It's certainly an inconvenience for business. And whether people want to say that or not, the fact is, it's an inconvenience for a person that is running a business." At which point, Ivanka Trump had just had enough. And she said, "I would like to say that I'm sorry the questions, you're finding them negative." Oh, no, that was Prachi Gupta. Well, having quoted Ivanka, "Well, you said he made those comments. I don't know that he said those comments." At which point, things went pretty well, you know, upside down, backwards, and sideways. And Ivanka Trump bailed. "I'm going to jump off. I have to run. I apologize." And of course, because I'm a mean person, I immediately thought, no. "Ivanka, wait till you get out in the middle of the George Washington Bridge and then jump off. And then we'll have something to, you know, be happy about." But that's pretty mild compared to nasty little son-o-Trump. Sot. We'll call Donald J. Trump Jr. millionaire who owns a mansion and a yacht and a plane and a dirigible helium-filled pants and a solid gold goldfish bowl. I mean, we'll call him Sot from now on. Son O. Trump. He wants everybody to understand just how denigrous it is for me having all these moose limbs here in Merca. Right? Discussing Syrian refugees, probably the majority of whom are Muslims, he likened them to, and I wish I was kidding, Skittles candy. Little sort of meaningless individual bites of artificially flavored sticky, chewy, fruit-flavored junk. Yes. To wit, he said, if I had a bowl of Skittles, and he stole an image and just sort of repurposed it for the Trump-Pence campaign, which I agree with you, Stockton Larry, in the chat room, sort of qualifies him as mini-meme. Oh, that's clever. That's clever. Wait a minute. Hold on. You don't just let those things blow by out there. Uh-huh. Mini-meme. Remember that. Put it on a post-it. That unpaid product placement is for 3M's post-it notes. Yes. If I had a bowl of Skittles and I told you just three would kill you, would you take a handful? That's our Syrian refugee problem. Oh, dear, oh, dear, oh, dear, oh, dear. The sot, Sonno Trump, then noted via the Twitter, this image says it all. Let's end the politically correct agenda that doesn't put America first. There's a reason we call. There's a reason we save stories like this for Titanic Tuesday.
I say, what's that you say there, Helmsman? There's an iceberg dead ahead? Yes. Ah, very good, very good. All ahead full, flank speed.
Mm-hmm. You know what's sad? That comparison was so goddamned odious, so utterly ignorant, that the Wrigley Corporation, which manufactures Skittles, and over a package of which Trayvon Martin died, let's remember. No, the Wrigley Company had to jump out with an explanation. Denise Young, Vice President of Corporate Affairs at Wrigley, Wrigley Americas, said, Skittles are candy. Refugees are people. We don't feel it's an appropriate analogy. We will respectfully refrain from further commentary as anything we say could be misinterpreted as marketing. Meanwhile, former deadbeat dad Joe Walsh, former Congressman Joe Walsh, former radio talk show host Joe Walsh, right winger, birth or death or ninth or tenth or bagger, birch or booger eater, helper probably, immediately took credit. I said the same thing about a month ago. Uh-huh. Yeah.
Surprise, surprise, surprise.
Right. So having been schooled by Wrigley Americas, well, so what? So I mentioned the reference to Trayvon Martin. And like everything, it has the Skittles thing has roots. And like everything that is promulgated by the right wing, the roots of it can be traced back to some other form of bigotry, prejudice, and or racism. And in point of fact, it was Julius Streicher, who was executed in 1946 as a war criminal. He was the publisher of a Nazi rag called Der Stürmer,
And he wrote an anti-Semitic children's book, if you can sort of wrap your head around that concept. But a lot of things happened during that time that sort of... What? But in the story, mother Nazi explains to son Nazi,
just as poisonous mushrooms spring up everywhere, so the Jew is found in every country in the world. Just as poisonous mushrooms often lead to the most dreadful calamity, so the Jew is the cause of misery and distress, illness and death.
Mm-hmm. So what we have now in 2016, no, I'm kidding, is a repurposing of Holocaust-era anti-Semitism, repurposed and repackaged with a new target. People fleeing the horrors for which we, the United States of America,
the greatest country in the history of the world, on earth, in the universe, now, today, forever, under God, hallelujah, amen,
is largely responsible. Everything old is new again. Jesus Christ! The Trumpers, including the sot, mini-meme, is literally recycling Nazi-era hate. With a stopover in good old-fashioned American racism. Titanic Tuesday. It's what it's for. Right. So we've got that to work with. Which, you know, is not good. Then let's run over to Illinois, shall we? And courtesy of the Minneapolis Star Tribune. I mean, I don't know why I said Illinois. Minnesota. Minnesota. Okay, we're all better now. No, there's an open seat in the Minnesota State Legislature. And I want to make sure I use the correct terminology here. Yeah, the creep who is running for that open seat is a person, or a creep, is a person by the name of Nolan West. Now, Nolan West has been in the past a supper at the public trough, a sucker at the public teat. Of course, he wants small government. Because he is, after all, a good, God-fearing, upstanding, Bible-believing, Christ-centered, evangelical, fundamentalist, homosexual Republican. Well, he's had to be in the non-apology apology business for a while. Because his Facebook page was kind of a hot mess. No, it wasn't kind of. We strive for accuracy here at the Horn. It really was a hot mess. A hot, racist, clannish, Confederate mess. You know, in Minnesota. On his Facebook page, Nolan West, marking the 150th anniversary of the resignation of Confederate President Jefferson Davis from the Senate of the United States, described Abraham Lincoln as the single worst president this country has ever seen. Digging a little deeper, the Minneapolis Star Tribune found where he had posted derogatory comments about women and gays. And he has tried to scrub his website, but so far, apparently Minnesota nice prevails, and it's all right. He just needs to learn, and they haven't run him out of the race. Shortly before Barack Obama was elected president in 2008, Nolan West ran to his Facebook page and turned on the caps lock and typed, "It's lynching time!" No, really, he did. Asked for comment, Nolan West said, "I apologize for posting insensitive material. I've taken those posts down because they do not reflect who I am or what I believe." Really? They don't? How so? Can we have a conversation about that? When did you stop believing them? Did you believe them when you posted them? Oh, absolutely not. Well, then why'd you post them? Oh, I think I was chewing the meth at that time. You know, that happens every now and then. So, you know, that. Oh, and I should probably mention, because I didn't. That this is, after all, a listener-supported broadcast operation. Ordinarily, we try to raise $200 every evening. I am thrilled to say that we met, we ultimately met Chris in Germany's challenge last night. So we find ourselves this evening, instead of the regular $200, trying to raise $450, which I'm hoping we can do. One at $450, two at $225, four at $112.50, eight at $66.25. No. Yeah. Yeah, eight at $66.25. $11 at $6.62, something like that. You get the idea. But we need to raise $450 this evening. And then that would actually put us back to rights by the time prayer meeting Wednesday rolls around tomorrow. And I've learned a hard lesson about locking the doors to the sanctuary during the... I won't do that again. But if you would like to help, and it is help that is badly needed because we are running rapidly out of September and we've got a Swede to beat, well, head on radionetwork.com, click on Contribute, and then there's the fields there where you fill out name, that kind of stuff. You can leave the thing absent about what you do and, you know, where you do it and why, and just get to the next page. Get to the next screen. That's what it's about. if you prefer the United States Postal Service, and many of you do, the mailing address for checks and money orders made payable to The Horn is The Horn. Aha. No, don't put the aha part in. The Horn, 1038 North Eisenhower Drive, PMB, 318 Beckley, Beckley, WV, 25801. Yes. And I hope, you know, I hope we take a big, no challenges on the table or anything like that. So, it's just there, and it just is what it is. Thanks to everybody who helped knock stuff down last night. We would be in a far worse mess now had you not. Let's see. More Titanic intellect. You know, there's an entire body of law out there that talk about the obligations of the state or of the government when they decide to incarcerate someone. Because one, upon incarceration, one loses many of one's civil rights. One's ability, for instance, to travel freely. One's ability to see to one's own medical needs. So if the state decides to incarcerate somebody, they, by definition, take on those obligations, because jail is not supposed to be a death sentence. So if a guy needs, or a woman, needs, say, blood pressure medication during the period of incarceration, it is incumbent upon the state to provide the same. You also cannot put, generally speaking, you cannot put prisoners on a ration of bread and water or transport them across the ocean seas. This, of course, was once done by Mother England. You know, Australia got the good end, got the long end of that stick. The indigenous peoples there might say otherwise, but yeah. England sent the beggars and thieves, cut purses, and bankrupts to Botany Bay.
Botany Bay. Botany Bay.
Yes, and they sent the religious maniacs and the corporate sociopaths to North America. Of course, I'm just speaking broadly there, but yes. But no, you can't just kill people. Or at least you're not supposed to be able to. According to a story in The Influence, which is an outfit dedicated to news about the about human relationships with drugs. Well, this is the story of Terrell Thomas. And Terrell Thomas had the misfortune of being poor, black, and involved with illicit substances, illegal substances, in Milwaukee, Wisconsin. Now, you might recall some weeks back, our dear friend Jenny up there, who taunts me with photographs of delightful beers from New Glarus Brewing Company. That's another unpaid product placement. Oh, my God, they are. It is. It's just beer taunting. One of these days, I really am. I'm gonna, but never mind. Serious story. Jenny mentioned to us a nasty, nasty, nasty human being in Milwaukee, Wisconsin, by the name of David Clarkey. He's the sheriff or, yeah, the Milwaukee County Sheriff. He's got an E on the end of his Clark name. I guess he's sort of Middle English Chaucerian. No, he's a darling of Fox News TV Radio Rwanda, because David Clarkey is black. And so he is an acceptable person of color to the folks over at Fox News TV Radio Rwanda. And he's sort of a cheesehead Joe Arpaio. You're going to be tough on crime. Well, he's in charge of the Milwaukee County Jail. He took some time out from his sheriffing duties to run all over the country, and he gets lots of speaking fees. I think he raked in something like $150,000 last year. And he got a speaking slot at the Clavern Conclave in Cleveland. Otherwise known as the Republican National Convention. So yeah, he's popular because he's tough on crime, and he doesn't like Black Lives Matter, and he talks about law and order, and he pontificates about black cultural dysfunction. Now remember, this is a story. This is a story about a man in that jail. I misled you a little bit because I talked about the obligation of the state to provide things like necessary medications. But 38-year-old Terrell Thomas didn't have any of that. 38-year-old Terrell Thomas, all he needed was nutrition and hydration. He was arrested related to a shooting in Milwaukee and was stuffed in the Milwaukee County Jail. And that is where, 9 days later, he died. He died. He did not die of suicide. He did not do himself in. He apparently wanted rather badly to live. But there are some essential rules that govern human existence. As we know from various yogis and religious avatars, you can go without food for a very, very long time. What was it? Yeshua, the brown-skinned Palestinian day laborer and itinerant semi-literate rabbi, fasted in the wilderness for 40 days and 40 nights. I guess they put the and nights in there because there are some traditions that allow you to eat after sundown. They were making clear that Yeshua, the brown-skinned Palestinian day laborer and itinerant semi-literate rabbi, he weren't eating nothing. But there's nothing in there that says Yeshua wasn't having a little glass of, well, no glass. Well, I mean, there was glass, but nothing he could afford. Having a cup of water from time to time. Maybe it was even sort of brackish, but water's water in that part of the world, and he was remaining hydrated. Because while you can go without food for rather a long period of time, we are, after all, water-based organisms. And you can you stop being real good at being a living human being if you don't have water for a while. And that's what happened to 38-year-old Terrell Thomas in the Milwaukee County Jail under the aegis and custody and control of tough-talking, tough-on-crime, black-splaining, hard-nosed Sheriff David Clarkey. Because over the course of day after day after day after day, to the tune of about six of them, Terrell Thomas in his cell begged. At first he just said, you know, "Can I have some water, please?" But a few days in he was down to begging, "Please. Please, please, water, please." One inmate looked at guards and said, "If something happens to that man, it's your fault." A lawyer for Terrell Thomas's family, Eric J. Hyped, told Huffington Post, No one should ever die of dehydration. It just should never happen. But it did. And it did so intentionally and deliberately there in the Milwaukee County Jail run by hard-nosed, tough-on-crime Milwaukee County Sheriff David Clarkey. And in point of fact, the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel reported the story as well. Noting that even 2 months after Terrell Thomas was killed, his family still had no answers. Yes, he was arrested after shooting a man in the chest. Yes, he was arrested after firing two shots in the Pottawatomie Casino. But early on, his lawyer said there was at least reason to suspect that there were competency issues. And that's when the judge in the case ordered a psychiatric exam. It was supposed to be completed by May 11th. Terrell Thomas was dead by April 24th. The family suspects not so much foul play, but malicious conduct. They think that Terrell Thomas was deprived of water because of erratic behavior that he displayed while incarcerated, and that jail guards responded by withholding water. Now, there is an official cause of death now. The official cause of death for Terrell Thomas is extreme dehydration. Which is, dying of thirst. something as simple as affording this man not some sort of embarrassing panoply of civil rights, mollycoddling, as the likes of David Clarkey, sheriff of Milwaukee County, might describe it, but just a damn drink of water. Just a damn drink of water. Then, of course, when officers arrived at the home of Terrell Thomas's parents to tell him he had died, the cop said, "You will, of course, keep this out of the media while we complete our investigation." And just in case you're wondering, back in 2014, not 2016, not this year, when Terrell Thomas died, but back in 2014, in an investigative piece by the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, they found that 10 people had died in the care, custody, and control of tough, hard-nosed, non-mollycoddling Sheriff David Clarkey over the course of 4 years. One woman, she had chest pains. They didn't get her medical care. Another man had his water shut off. Another committed suicide when he didn't get the antidepressants which he was prescribed. And out of all of those things, not one person was charged with a crime. And where Terrell Thomas was concerned, he rarely slept. It seemed apparent to Marcus Berry, who was in a cell across from him, that he was in a mental health crisis. He'd slap the walls of his cell and yell, "Pure cocaine!" Or, "T.J. Thomas is my daddy!" Or, "God is coming soon!" Not things that mentally healthy people generally say. So the day that he was brought to the segregation unit, they turned off his water supply. The day they brought him there. In the segregation unit, the inmates there under the care, custody, and control of hard-nosed, tough Milwaukee County Sheriff David Clarkey are fed something called Nutri-Loaf. Inmates in the segregation unit get that instead of, you know, decent food. Marcus Berry went on and said, "I could tell he was getting weaker. One day he just lay down, dehydrated and hungry." Berry asked him if he needed water, and Thomas tried to say yeah, but he couldn't. He couldn't speak anymore. The inmate said, "Cell 15 needs water." By 1:30 a.m. that morning, guards found Terrell Thomas unresponsive. 30 minutes later, they pronounced him dead. They zipped him up in a body bag and hauled him away. He had a history of mental illness. Episodes that started when he was 22 years old. Shouting weird things. Sometimes he'd cry. Sometimes he'd go without sleep for days on end. His mama, Celia Thomas, who no longer has a son, said whatever was causing his breakdowns would go away and come back. But David Clarkey talks about black dysfunction and talks about how black lives matter is bad for America and they don't respect the police. Yeah. 3 times in the last 15 years, he was admitted to Milwaukee County Mental Health Complex. The only thing they ever diagnosed him with was high blood pressure, because here in Merca, we have the greatest health care system in the history of the world, on earth, in the universe, now, today, forever. Only when it's not. The poor man was expecting mama to bring him food, and that's why he wouldn't eat the Nutriloaf. His girlfriend tried to go and see him, but they denied her access to him. You know, when people are denied access to prisoners in other countries, we call them things like dictatorships, and we talk about brutal authoritarian regimes. But in Merca, we call it justice. Brother Deacon Asa points out young Terrell Thomas was lucky his car didn't break down. He would have been blown away in seconds instead of slowly withering away over days. Because, see, Colin Kaepernick has no point whatsoever. There's nothing to him. Oh, no, of course not. Right? No. Oh, by the way, there's a Terrence Crutcher update. That's the name of the man who was blown away in a couple of seconds there in Tulsa on Friday. Car broke down. Well, now they're circling the wagons in Tulsa. The blue wagons. The blue wagons with "to protect and to serve" written on them. And they have now declared that Terrence Crutcher had it coming. No, really. The lawyer, because Officer Betty Shelby has lawyered up, courtesy of the cop union, I'm sure. Officer Betty Shelby, who blew away Terrence Crutcher last week, said that she had a good faith belief that Terrence Crutcher was high on the PCP. There is, of course, no scientific evidence to back this up whatsoever. This is just the usual thing that happens. This is the typical sliming of a black man after he has been summarily executed by the police. There's no toxicology. One officer said that he found a vial of PCP in the vehicle the night that Officer Betty Shelby blew him away. But he curiously was unable to say where or how he came to find that vial of mysterious PCP. Nope, sorry. That's just, no, Betty Shelby was acting in absolute good faith. Because it's a dangerous world out there, and cops' lives matter. This did not sit well with Benjamin Crump, who has been hired to represent the Crutcher family. He said, don't put out stuff that would demonize him and try to make him look as if he was doing something nefarious. Put the entire story up. If we start to condemn everybody to death just because they have drugs in their system, all our neighborhoods would be empty. And the thing about what Benjamin Crump said is, A, it's true, and B, he wasn't talking about, I'm presuming he didn't mean our black neighborhoods, he meant all our neighborhoods, because lots of people on drugs, because this is a hard, hard, hard country to live in. Officer Betty Shelby's pettifogging mouthpiece says that he was reaching in his car to grab something. This, of course, is militated against by the fact that A, Terrence Crutcher had no weapon, and the window was rolled up, and at the same time Betty Shelby killed him in cold blood. He was also tasered by another officer. I don't see how this story just goes away. But is there anybody here who expects there to be anything resembling justice? Or Terrence Crump? Because I sincerely do not. But Benjamin Crump is going to try. Let's take a break. It's about 9 minutes past the hour. And as noted, we have $450 to raise this evening. Thank you very kindly to Ralphs, who has put forward another challenge this evening, a $25 challenge, hoping to see that matched by another $25, which will take us down to $400 to go. Thank you very kindly, Ralphs. Meanwhile, in New York, Steve notes, it pains me to think this, but as a Christian, what do you want to bet this sheriff was a good, upstanding, Bible, God-fearing, upstanding, Bible-believing, Christ-centered, evangelical Christian with a miniature Decalogue on his desk? Oh, well, Steve, you cynic, you. I'm sure he's got a great goddamn big Decalogue hanging on his wall. Yeah, complete with the line about thou shalt not kill. Mm-hmm. Yeah. All right. Like I said, it is time for a break, which we will take. And if you'd like to participate in what we like to call here conversation radio, I heartily welcome it. You know the numbers, I trust. 304-663-4676. That's 304-663-HORN. The other number is 304-574-8178. And from anywhere on the planet, because we're just funny that way, because I really do cherish the idea of conversation. From anywhere on the planet, Skype to Skype, I mean, assuming your government will let you, Skype to Skype, Bob Kincaid Horn, BobKincaidHorn, Bob Kincaid Horn. And if you've never sent me a contact request before and you've decided to, well, you know, there's a bee under your bonnet and a burr under your saddle and you just have to get something said, when you send the contact request, put something like the horn in it or horn listener or Titanic Tuesday or something, just to let me know that you're part of the community and you're not seeking to you're not seeking my aid in recovering some lost Nigerian fortune. Okay. Email comes in, I should remind people, to Bob Kincaid, BobKincaid at gmail.com. On Facebook, Bob Kincaid, and at Bob Kincaid on Twitter. He sure does like to say Bob Kincaid. Yes, he does. All right, and we also have, coming up, this here being a Tuesday, we have the Green News Report with Brad Friedman and Desi Doyen, which I enjoy, and I hope you do too, on Tuesdays and Thursdays. That's all ahead. All ahead full. On Titanic Tuesday, on the Horn. I'm Bob Kincaid.
Trouble world. yonder dressed in blue. Children that's coming through. God's gonna trouble the water there. Wait in the water. Wait in the water, children. Wait in the water. God's gonna trouble the water.
It's Tuesday, September 20, 2016.
The pipelines, they're underground. You don't hear anything about them until something goes wrong.
Massive gasoline pipeline spill in Alabama. Temporary reprieve for the Dakota Access Pipeline. UN Secretary General trying to Trump-proof landmark climate pact. Plus,
we must protect and value vital marine ecosystems rather than treating the oceans as an endless resource to be exploited and as a dumping ground for our waste.
Leonardo DiCaprio wants you to watch over the oceans.
He is the king of the world, after all. All of those stories and more straight ahead from bradblog.com. I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
Stand by for 6 minutes of independent green news, politics, analysis, and snarky comment.
For the first time ever in recorded history, everywhere in the United States for the next 90 days is projected to be well above normal temperature-wise. Something to think about.
I don't know. Seems like more than just something to think about. But I guess a local meteorologist can't say something to keep you awake at night as you ponder a future on a slowly dying planet. Now over to Kevin with sports.
And now over to Desi Doyen with the Green News Report.
I'm gonna soak up the sun.
Okay, Desi Doyen, a lot of pipelines in the news for the past week or two, and this week is no exception.
Yep, it's true. Cleanup crews are now hard at work in Alabama at a massive gasoline pipeline spill. No cause yet determined for the estimated 350,000-gallon spill that's now causing gas shortages across the southeast. That prompted the governors of Alabama and five other states to declare states of emergency to accelerate fuel delivery and curb price gouging. Alabama reporter Dennis Pillion, in an interview on the broadcast, said the leak was actually a lucky break located next to an abandoned mine retaining pond that captured most of the gasoline by chance, sparing a wildlife refuge.
The Cahaba River has numerous threatened and endangered species under the Endangered Species Act that are found nowhere else in the world. So it's also a major concern that the gasoline not reach the Cahaba River. And from everything we're hearing, the gasoline is not reaching this river. It certainly seems that we might have caught an incredibly lucky break there.
Incredibly lucky that the rupture just happens to have gone into an old abandoned coal mine retaining pond. It's kind of remarkable, actually.
Also remarkable, pipeline owner Colonial Pipeline is being praised by both officials and even the Cahaba Riverkeeper organization for its cleanup response.
That won't last. Remember, they're not allowing any journalists into the site yet because the fumes are so overwhelming. So we'll keep our eyes on this over the next few days and weeks.
Speaking of pipelines and spills, up in North Dakota, a temporary reprieve in the legal effort to stop the Dakota Access Pipeline near the Standing Rock Sioux Tribe Reservation. Late on Friday, the D.C. Circuit Court of Appeals ruled to temporarily halt all construction for 20 miles on either side of the Missouri River crossing until the tribe's full lawsuit can be heard. In a separate action, a federal judge also threw out a restraining order against the tribal chairman, David Archambault, and several protesters. In other news, at the Our Oceans Conference in Washington, D.C. late last week, actor and environmentalist Leonardo DiCaprio announced the release of a new free online tool that uses live satellite and radar data to allow any user to track any industrial fishing operation in the oceans to help stop illegal fishing.
Nice.
This platform will empower citizens across the globe to become powerful advocates for our oceans. With the data Global Fishing Watch provides governments, fishery management organizations, researchers, and the fishing industry can work together to rebuild fisheries and protect critical marine habitats. We encourage all of you to take advantage of this new technology and work together to effectively monitor and protect our seas.
The online monitoring tool is free at globalfishingwatch.org. Also, at the Global Oceans Conference, U.S. Secretary of State John Kerry announced more than $5 billion in new funding for conservation programs, and five nations, including France, will implement plastic bag bans to help stem the tide of plastic pollution choking wildlife in the seas. That was last week. This week is the United Nations General Assembly in New York City, where the New York Times reports UN Secretary General Ban Ki-moon is trying to Trump-proof the historic Paris Agreement by speeding up ratification of the accord. That agreement binds all nations to cut greenhouse gas emissions and will come into force when 55 nations representing 55% of global emissions sign on. The world's two biggest polluters, China and the United States, have signed. If the European Union countries complete fast-track ratification by early October, the accord could be enacted as early as the day before the United States presidential election in November. That would be record speed for an international compact. Now, it wouldn't stop a potential Trump administration from undermining the accord, but it would make it much more difficult.
Unbelievable that the UN has to go to this kind of measure to Trump-proof the climate agreement. Just extraordinary. For much more on that story and all of the others that we couldn't get to today, check out our website at greennews.bradblog.com. Don't forget, you can download our reports anytime via Stitcher, TuneIn, or iTunes. Find us and follow us on the Facebooks and the Twitters at Green News Report. I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
And this has been your Green News Report.
You know, I'm usually pretty effusive in my praise of Brad and Desi for their choice of bumper music, but you just had to pick that one, didn't you? Yeah. Mm-mm. No, Jack, I'm not. No, Jack, I'm not sharing my door with you, buddy. You're gonna lay there. You're gonna bob along there in the frigid waters of the North Atlantic and freeze to death, bub, because I might survive. Just a hopeless romantic. Yes. And thank you very kindly. Ralph's challenge has been met, and it has been pressed down and shaken together by an anonymous contribution, so I can happily announce that, taken together, we now have only $350 to raise this evening in the remaining 1 hour and 36 minutes and change that we have in the program, because I kind of over-filibobstered a little bit. You may have noted during the Green News Report the mention of the massive gasoline spill, because that's, you know, pipelines leak. And one of the essential problems that attends pipelines, and it's kind of hard not to, if one was inclined to believe in supernatural forces and deities and whatnot, one would almost think that some deity, perhaps a deity worshipped by people indigenous to this continent, reached down its supernatural finger and boom, that colonial pipeline in Alabamistan, Talabama, to sort of teach a little love tap to the court system there. To remember what it is that pipelines do. Oh, you mean transport hydrocarbons? No, leak! 350,000 gallons of gasoline, refined gasoline. Yes. And they're trying to keep it from getting into the Cahaba River. I get all worked up about the Cahaba River. See, when you're a little redneck child growing up in Talabama, they teach you all the great rivers of your state: the Tennessee, the Coosa, the Tallapoosa, the Alabama, the Cahaba, the Black Warrior, the Mobile. And you learn things like the Cahaba River flows into the Alabama River just not too far west of a town in Dallas County called Selma, over which there is a bridge named for one Edmund Pettus, which has gone down in infamy in the history of the struggle for civil rights in this country. But on the bluffs overlooking the Alabama and Cahaba rivers where they join, the first state capital of Alabama was founded, a place called Cahaba. And its history is absolutely fascinating. It is a modern-day ruin. The bluff is pretty high up above the river, but the river has gotten up over the bluff a couple of times, and the early Alabama state capitol was so badly flooded that legislators were said to have rode out the second-story windows of the new capitol. There was actually a power struggle going on, and there were people who were very unhappy that the state capitol was in Cahaba. And that's how it finally wound up on Goat Hill in Montgomery, where some little less than 40 years later, Jefferson Davis would stand on the portico of the Capitol and take the oath as president of a nation of treasonous traitors to the United States. Mm-hmm. If you're ever down that way, going to the ruins of Cahaba, very few people ever go there, but going to the ruins of Cahaba will be a haunting experience. And I don't say that as a pun, but as a reflection of the eeriness of it. There was a, for instance, there's a book, I think you can find it for free out there, called Tales of Old Cahaba, and it was written by an elderly woman at the turn of the 20th century as an effort to recall the history of the region. She recounts this German community that lived there. That would have a German festival every year in which they gave out free beer, but only gave it to people who spoke German, which, of course, caused any number of good, God-fearing, upstanding, Bible-believing, Christ-centered, evangelical Scots-Irish to at least learn to say, Zwei Glas bitte. That's what Mark Twain says you have to say. But it's a beautiful area. That whole area is one of the last remnants of what is ecologically known as short grass prairie in the southeastern United States. And it is hot. Lord God, it gets hot down there. And humid. And it is fragile. And, oh, hey, look, like Brad and Desi pointed out, thank God, I guess, for abandoned coal mines. Hi, hello, Arthur. Arthur pointing out, in Celine Dion's defense, Brother Bob, that cold really triggered her affluenza. Oh, that's good. That's good, Arthur. Now, if you ever do get a chance, see that area. Go to Selma and see where so much history unfolded. It's hard to keep your eyes dry. Let's put it that way. 350,000 gallons. And now, of course, everybody up the East Coast is being, Alabama, Georgia, North Carolina, Virginia, Tennessee, is having the hell gouged out of them as a reminder that we need pipelines. No, we need electric vehicles. I saw a story the other day that it is expected that the last internal combustion gasoline engine driven automobile will be produced 2050, 2060. Yeah. Of course, some people are out there ahead of the curve. Our buddy Scott in Sweden and his beloved Brigitta, are on what they call a slowpoke road trip through Europe right now. And the theory being, and I find it absolutely engaging and charming, the theory being that they are going to travel from Sweden to Spain in a Nissan Leaf that has an effective range of, about 70 miles? And so they're, along the way, they're taking back roads, and they're taking note of where charging stations are, and they're taking nice little breaks while they charge the car, and seeing the countryside, and they're documenting it along the way. And I hope Scott will not mind if I tell you that it's under the URL slowpokeroadtrip.com, because I'm reading it, and I'm vicariously traveling with them. And it's a lot of fun. Oh, by the way, in terms of meeting Ralph's challenge, thanks go out to Angelica. Thank you, Angelica. Thank you very, very kindly. And to Anonymous. Not that Anonymous, different Anonymous. So, yes, thank you indeed, and we've got $350 to raise in the next 86 minutes or so. Hopefully, because there are many, many bills to be paid. Also, a quick reminder, the dollar challenge continues, courtesy of Larry, who put that forward over a week ago. We have crossed under 200, where we are nearing crossing under 200 people responding to that challenge. Larry asking people to contribute a dollar at a time. This is for people who've never or haven't in a very, very long time helped keep the horn going. A dollar at a time, a buck. And Larry will in turn double it, so that ultimately it will wind up in $333. And Larry will then contribute $666. What a lovely number. And he'll actually throw in the extra dollar to make it an even week's funding for the horn. And that continues through the 30th day of September. It's an effort to sort of involve more people in keeping things going here. Thank you, Larry. Thank you very kindly. And thanks to everybody who, a dollar at a time, sometimes five, sometimes ten, have responded. And thanks, Ralphs, for the challenge this evening. What else? Okay, so, yeah, there's the issue of the potential devastation to the Cahaba River, which flows into the Alabama, which flows into the Mobile, which flows into Mobile Bay, which flows into the Gulf of Mexico. Oh, no, the Gulf of Mexico. Yeah, that Gulf of Mexico. But a little ways east, because business, because capitalism, because money, it's time for us to learn about the Mosaic Company. Mosaic, among other things, produces fertilizers. Mosaic is headquartered, I do believe, in Minnesota. But they have operations all over the company, or all over the country. Country, company, whatever. tomato, tomato. No, they're Minnesota-based, and they've got a little problem in Floridistan. And by little, I mean, well, 215 million gallons. Of what? Water, just water. Because, see, they're a fertilizer company, and they've got a phosphate plant in Mulberry, Florida. You don't think about it, but these things are down there. It's not all beaches and sunshine and the spring break and what have you. There's a lot of rural internal Florida with a lot of potential industrial disasters going on. One of them brought to you by the Mosaic Company, who back on August the 27th, Bob, why are we talking about an August the 27th story? Well, because that's when this happened, but the Mosaic Company, they notified the state, the authorities there in Florida, you know, where it's officially the policy that it is illegal for any member of state government to mention climate change or sea level rise, and where mentioning things like, what did I say? Oh, yeah, 215 million gallons of water seeping away. That's apparently not something they want to talk about either, because on August the 27th, they noticed that there was a water level dropping at their fertilizer facility there in Mulberry. They let the state know, and then neither the Mosaic Company nor the state of Floridistan notified the public for another 3 weeks or so. Well, hell, Bob, it's water. It's just water. Everybody needs water. We like water. I mean, I'll bet you that fella up in Milwaukee would have liked to have that some of that water. No, not really. Not really. The water disappeared because of a sinkhole that opened up, 45 feet in diameter, there at the phosphate plant run by the Mosaic Company in Mulberry, Florida. And that's when, after the sinkhole opened up, the 215 million gallons of water just, you know, seeped off into the aquifer. I mean, that's good. That's more water for the aquifer. Well, there's only one problem. And I'll bet it's already, I bet you everybody, I bet in the chat room they've already guessed. Ah, good. Snork's in there. I'll bet he can address this. So can V.T. Blom. V.T. Blom has pointed out Mosaic owns over 300,000 acres at that site alone. And so the 215 million gallons of water that just sort of seeped away into the aquifer, it's a particular aquifer, it's called the Floridan Aquifer. The 215 million gallons that just sort of went bye-bye into the aquifer, well, it's radioactive. Yes, that kind of radioactive. Now, the Mosaic Company said, they described it as slightly radioactive. Meanwhile, Jessica Broadbent, who doesn't live too awfully far from the Mosaic facility, and that must just be a lovely experience, phosphate facilities smell just yummy, said, it's going into our water supply, it's affecting our children, our children's children, eventually our community, it affects our environment. She said, I think there should have been 100% transparency. I'm very upset about the fact that they didn't tell us for 3 weeks. Let us drink it, bathe in it, cook with it, do our laundry with it. Radioactive, you know, water. Meanwhile, the fine corporately responsible folks at Mosaic Company up in Minnesota said Mosaic is using groundwater, well P4, to recover water that was lost as a result of the sinkhole formation. The well, which is 24 inches in diameter and 800 feet deep, is located west of the South Gypstack, GYP, and is shown in the in a photo we've got here for you. Well, there's a problem. As one resident who has now been poisoned by slightly radioactive water said, if you drop 215 million gallons of water into a moving body of water, how in the world are you going to reclaim even a good portion of that, much less any of it? I'd like to see the science behind that and how they can prove that they've reclaimed this water. Meanwhile, WFLA has video footage that shows the water leaking into the aquifer. And the water wasn't seen leaking into the aquifer the previous day. Mosaic, meanwhile, says, well, you know, the cleanup's going to take years. Y'all don't need any water for a few years, do you? Yeah, no, good. But see, there's this about the Floridan aquifer. The Floridan aquifer doesn't just sort of sit there. It is an artesian aquifer, built thousands of years ago by the artesians. No. It's an artesian aquifer, and that artesian aquifer, well, it's in Florida. It goes into parts of southern Alabama. It reaches into southeastern Georgia. And it reaches into southern South Carolina. As a water supply, the water they drink in Savannah and Brunswick, Georgia. It supplies drinking water to Daytona Beach, Deltona, Flagler Beach, Gainesville, Tampa, Jacksonville, Ocala, Orlando, St. Petersburg, and Tallahassee. Oh my God, it supplies water to the happiest place on earth? Yes. I will, in short order, no, you can imagine the Disney people going, our water's what? Okay, that makes sense. Earth are pointing out, they reclaimed it with an animation, Brother Bob. Remember the fracking animations? Nothing bad ever happens to the water there. Yeah, in a couple of years, Mosaic will be paying for ads of people. You know, hired actors, not real Floridians, saying, come on down to Mulberry Springs. We got the best shrimp. Nuh-uh, we got the best steaks. Uh-uh. Just like they did with the Gulf Coast. Right, sure. 215 million gallons of slightly. And wouldn't you love to have been a fly on the wall for that phone call? This is Mosaic. Can I talk to one of those guys I bought over there? I had lunch with over there in the Florida Department of Environmental Protection. Yeah. You know our gyp stacks where we store our wastewater because it's not just the coal industry and the fracking industry that does that? You know our gyp stacks? Yeah, we had one of them leak, buddy. Went down into the aquifer. It sure damn did. Oh, now calm down. It's just slight. It's got some radiation in it. Oh, okay. What are we going to we'll tell them it's slightly radioactive. So if Earther in the chat room says, I live in Gainesville. V.T. Blom lives in Florida. So if you have to go out and buy a fucking Geiger counter for your water, do you get to bill it to the Mosaic folks? Or do you are people signing on to a class action suit? Or are lawsuits like that allowed in the conservative paradise that is Florida, Stan? Shame on me for even telling this story. It'll be bad for tourism in Florida. Nah, the tourists will still go down there. I'm not going to tell my... I don't know, should I? I've got a dear friend who after 20 years, more 30 years of busting his ass up here in West Virginia, finally bought himself a home in South Florida. Do I tell him? Is that what a friend would do? Or would a friend just kind of sit silent and hope that slightly radioactive is really slight? Snork tells me in the chat room the death from exposure to lanthanides can happen in 15 to 30 years. He says, well, that's not a problem for most Floridian retirees. So maybe it's no big deal. But then again, if it's in your aquifer and you're drinking out of it in, say, the Redneck Riviera of Alabama, or you're bathing in it daily, drinking it, whatever, in Brunswick and Savannah, might be a problem. And by the way, how does stuff like this happen? I'm not just... Can we take a minute, because I'm sure this is unfair, because this constitutes playing the blame game. But can we take a moment and point out that slightly radioactive water to the tune of 215 million gallons gets into your aquifer in Florida as a direct and proximate result of something called politics? In one of my favorite novels in the American English language, All the King's Men, by Robert Penn Warren, there's a passage where the man who later becomes the boss, the political demagogue around whom the protagonist sort of, around whom the story develops, early in his career, he tries to intervene as county treasurer in a rigged bid process for the building of a new school in a rural area of what we understand to be Louisiana. And he fails, and he pays a political price for it and loses the next election. A couple of years go by, and they have a fire drill at the brand new shiny elementary school. And the shiny-faced little scholars come out on the third floor or whatever and start proceeding down the fire escapes that are bolted into the side of the school, at which point the bolts give way from the brick, because the brick was crummy brick that was made by a political crony of one involved in one of the rigged bids, and the fire escape stops being attached to the side of the shiny new school building, and the shiny young scholars go plunging, some of them to their deaths. And there's a reference in there where Robert Penn Warren describes the building materials of the corrupted school as politics rotten brick. I first read that book, God, I was probably 21 years old. And I reread it about once a year. And the Sean Penn attempt at the movie version of it was okay. But frankly, John Goodman should have been cast as the boss and not Sean Penn. But that's me. The book remains by far the better and more thought-provoking work of art. But from the first time I read it until this moment, that line, politics rotten brick, has stayed with me. because it's a stand-in for just about any time that you look up and realize that something that should have been easy, something that should have been simple, something that should have been uncomplicated, is made more complicated, made complicated at all, by the presence of political corruption. And so where in that story, they were dealing with politics rotten brick, in Florida you have politics poisoned water. Because the only reason you have a ban in Florida on among government workers on the mere mention of climate change or sea level rise, the reason you have an entirely corrupted executive branch, administrative branch of the government is because mostly cranky old white people went to the polls and voted for that corruption. As progressive people, we must certainly stand in slack-jawed amazement at the fact that Rick Scott is still the governor of Florida and still has not been indicted for anything. At the fact that Pam Bondi, the attorney general of Florida, can play footsie with Donald Trump and come away with her little piggies untainted. They are what they are. But they get to be what they are because of the actions of voters. Now, the thing about All the King's Men and the politics rotten brick is that at the funeral of one of the young scholars, a man puts his hands in the air and says, "Oh Lord, I voted against an honest man and I stand punished for it." And that's the beginning of Willie Stark's meteoric rise to complete dominance of state government. Up until then, he'd just been Cousin Willie from the country. But the problem, when 215 million gallons of slightly radioactive water, which Sister Carol Baker notes, is slightly radioactive water anything at all like a little pregnant? I'm asking for a friend. And I would say that it is part and parcel of the same idea. Slightly radioactive water, well, in modern American politics, and maybe just in the real world, maybe it only happens in the story crafting of a great storyteller like Robert Penn Warren. Only in fiction does a man raise his hands to heaven and say, "Oh Lord, I voted against an honest man, and I stand punished for it." Maybe that only happens in fiction, because you see, every goddamned Republican in Florida who voted or has voted for Rick Scott and the countless tens of thousands of Democrats in 2000 who voted for George W. Bush or, inexplicably, Pat Buchanan, they are why 215 million gallons of slightly radioactive water gets into an aquifer that extends into Georgia, South Carolina, and Alabama. It really is that simple. But if you try to point this out, there's not enough self-awareness, there's not enough introspection left inside the Republican Party for any of them to say, oh, wow, I had a hand in that. My politics my politics and my constant howling about cop lives matter and blue lives matter and I want me some small libertarian gummit is directly and proximately responsible for the 215 million gallons of slightly radioactive water that my neighbors are now drinking. I stand rebuked, and I'll never do it again. Republicans can't do that now. Once upon a time, they could. During the heady days of the boom of the 1920s, we mentioned them last night, Warren Gamaliel Harding, Calvin Coolidge, Herbert Hoover. And betting on margin on the stock market and happy days and bathtub gin and what have you. Organized crime run rampant. People voted for Republicans in droves. My family didn't. But others did. But when Republican policies burned the country to the ground and gave birth to that little old thing called the Great Depression, ordinary people wised up, and they gave FDR a Democratic majority House and a Democratic majority Senate, and told FDR, they gave him a real political mandate to fix the mess that the Republicans had created. And he set about doing it. It's a long and a complex history, but that's the essence of it. And I don't know that we've seen anything like that since. And perhaps more pertinently, I don't know if we ever will again. We have been significantly dumbed down since then. We have a relentless for-profit media that cannot bear to talk about these sorts of truths. My God, can you imagine some intrepid reporter for Chicken Noodle News ever sticking a camera and a microphone in the face of some good God-fearing, upstanding, Bible-believing, Christ-centered, evangelical, amosexual fundamentalist in Florida and say, well, you know, you voted for Rick Scott, didn't you? I sure did, because he's got family values. And his administration has a lax attitude toward the safety of the public relative to the environment and industrial poisons. By voting for him, you helped bring this on yourself and your neighbors. How do you feel about that? Huh? You must not love Jesus. Because that's what you get. Ray, in Florida, points out, and even our Democrats are Republicans. Arguably, yes. Oh, and Jack, you get a cowbell for this, buddy. Subject line, water. How about this? You have a bowl full of Skittles and three of them are radioactive. Do you want to eat a handful? Oh, that doesn't count because they're because capitalism, damn it. Yeah. So I'm going to take a brief break. If you want to get in touch with the program, you are more than welcome to do so. Multiple lines. No, no break. Let's see. Let's go over to the 304-574-8178 line. The stress line, of course, and it works for some and not for others. The stress line is 304-663-4676. That's 304-663-HORN. But meanwhile, from somewhere in the Las Vegas area code, welcome to the program.
Yeah, can you hear me okay?
I gotcha.
Cool beans. Yeah, got an observation. You may agree or disagree, but it seems to be the whole lot of this going on where it's like the lady down there, lady cop, who said, I had an honest belief in the fear of my life. I believed he was on drugs, and now we have people, all this damn poisonous water, and the politicians will say, well, I had no reason to believe that this would happen. All this lawyer talk. We got too much of this L.A. law business where, you know, as long as they can hide behind the legal disclaimer of plausible deniability, oh, they'll sell anybody down the river. As long as they can swear up and down, they didn't give them the paddles.
Down the river and into the or into the aquifer, as the case may be, John.
Yeah, I mean, in a way, it's almost a pity this ain't like a Marvel universe, because, you know, we could probably do with a few mutants coming out of the Florida Panhandle to wake them up a little bit. But yeah, I mean, it's like, part of what got me to call you was that, you know who this is John, the truck driver guy.
Yeah.
I was in a restaurant in Oklahoma State. And, this police issue is starting to get a little bit, starting to dig in a little bit because, I was sitting there eating some lunch and, a table full of, and I, for politeness sake, I won't bother saying what county and state, what part of the county I was and stuff I was in. But you had a mixture of county and a state guy and a local town sheriff. And the subject of their conversation was, is that, well, why don't people like us anymore? I'm pulling somebody over now and they're not even opening their doors. They're leaving the windows curled up. Just crack the window in. Stick their wallet out the crack of the window and say, we don't want to talk to you. And they had one guy.
Wait, time out. That was a cop?
No, it was the cops complaining that the people are all scared of them. And, you know, when they pull somebody over, the people won't even roll their windows down. They'll crack their window and they'll stick their license out through the crack. And on all the while, and I heard this, I was surprised. On the same time, they got their cell phone out. They're calling 911 to call for another cop to come out because they don't trust them, especially if they happen to have a different skin color than the one they have. And these cops are all sitting there going, you know, this is getting a little stupid out here. I mean, these people, you know, they're not even listening to us. You know, I pulled a guy over, and the first words out of his mouth was, fuck you, copper. And it's like, really?
They're still using copper out there? I haven't heard that since Edward G. Robinson said it.
Well, he was fairly old, so he might be a near retiree. But yeah, it was, I mean, I was sitting there listening. I'm eating my soup, and I'm eating it real slow, and my right ear was growing really big, and I'm just tuning in on this thing. And I think after a while, they realized, well, wait a minute, this guy, he's listening. Oh, well, we're done now? Yeah, okay, cool, yeah. But yeah, they were just, and it's not the first, although it's the most expensive that I've heard, but I've heard it now several times. Cops themselves are starting to get, you know, it's like on Facebook. Not too long ago, I got on Facebook and it seems like every damn day there's another dang person getting shot and killed because the cops are afraid of them. I'm like, well, my God,
but realistic, John, and happy birthday, by the way.
Oh, okay. Thanks.
Realistically, is it, and it is the horror and the tragedy of this is that most of it is directed toward the black community, but when civilians and civilian legislatures pass laws at the behest of the NRA and over the objections of law enforcement that say, like is in the case in Florida, that anybody who has the remotest subjective fear can blow somebody else away, are we really surprised when that paranoia bleeds over into law enforcement? This is not by any stretch of the imagination a justification or a defense of law enforcement, but it's, to my way of thinking, it's just an observation of empirically observable fact.
Oh, I totally agree with you. I mean, you know, we sit here and, maybe 3 weeks ago, I had a conversation with a police officer, and now we're just having this conversation. And he was talking about how dangerous it is to police officers. And I said, you need to shut up. He goes, what do you mean? And I said, go look at the Department of Labor statistics. Truck drivers, cab drivers, and certain breeds of construction workers have a multiple times higher chance of getting killed on the job than a police officer. I mean, you guys, yeah, it may be dangerous for you out there, but you also wear body armor, you travel in packs, you have the best equipment, you're armed to the freaking teeth. You know, yeah, you might have to go through some scary situations, but a guy like me, all it takes is one freaking nut to be talking, you know, I'm using hands-free devices and all kinds of technology right now to make it just talk to you. But you got people out there that, you know, they'll be on Facebook and Twitter and painting their toenails and everything. And all it takes is one of those knuckleheads to drift off into a lane, and I'm a statistic. Cab drivers get shot every freaking day. And you can tell you, if you ever get a chance to talk to Tracy, I think it's your lady cab driver in L.A., she'll tell you. Cab drivers are not the safest profession out there. And, you know, and in a lot of places, I used to drive a cab, and I drove a cab in Florida. And at the time, now, of course, like you say, the laws are starting to change a bit because of all the crazy paranoia. But at the time when I drove a cab, it was illegal for a cab driver to have a weapon in the vehicle for his own protection. You weren't allowed to. That was a violation of some of local statutes in the county that I was operating out of. And so I was pretty much, you know, some drunken idiot Floridite, you know, packing heat, and the stripper didn't give him the happy ending that he wanted. He's all mad. Next thing you know, I've got a gun pulled in my face. You know, and it's not surprising that, you know, like where I was in Florida, you know, half the trips I took in the cab were for people who couldn't afford to drive because they had lost their license because they had been doing drugs and alcohol and stuff. And so they were making me transport to go pick up the drugs for the next run. You know, the cab drivers were pretty much just, you know, transporting the druggies around getting their fixes. So it was dangerous work. But again, it's so much of it is, it's all driven by money. You know, it's crazy. You know, cops are not out there. It used to be that the cop, you know, if he saw you doing something, 9 times out of 10, if you were drunk, he'd put you in the back of his car and take you home. Now he's required by statute to arrest you and do all the stuff. He doesn't become part of the community anymore. Nobody likes him.
Yeah. And of course, if you're running around in Oklahoma, I mean, been anywhere near Tulsa?
That's I think that's what drove the conversation, because like I said, I was down in the southern part of the state earlier today, and I think that was what was driving the conversation with these groups of officers. They were saying, my understanding of, again, listening to what I was able to listen to, that was what was driving their conversation. They were saying, this is getting ridiculous out here. We can't protect ourselves because now everybody's got a damn camera on their cell phones. They're watching us like a hawk. And if we
but the thing with Tulsa, though, it's not anybody's cell phone video.
It's video
from the dash cam and video from the helicopter cam. Because they hovered a helicopter over a car breakdown.
Yeah, well, see, that's the thing. I mean, these cops...
Interestingly, though, no body cam.
Oh, yeah. I've watched a kind of abbreviated piece of it on, like, Facebook. I saw a piece of it, watched a little bit of it. And, the guys on the ground have been shot, and yet you watch this thing where all the cops were backing away from him like he was like a super zombie or something, and he was about to jump up and, bite their face off or something. And, although it didn't have much audio, but nonetheless, it was like, they were like, oh, my God, oh, we're in big trouble now. Oh, you could just see their body language and everything, and it was like, oh, my God, geez, we're going to get it. Get our story straight, guys. Come on, what you love. And I'm like, these people just, this stuff's getting scary because, they're not out doing police work anymore. They're, I don't know what the hell they're doing. It's too much of it is in revenue generation. Too much of it is,
tax collectors with funny hats.
Yeah. They got this one. What I'm a little worried about is they've got, I don't know if it's been passed yet or not, but I only read part of it, but somebody's proposing a law to try to turn police officers that if you speak badly
to them.
No,
that's Louisiana. Bringing a cult.
Yeah, I mean, it's like if they are going to start being treated as a protected class, that's going to make it so that nobody will be able to try to, will be able to challenge them, because then that gives them the automatic.
Yeah, but John, I'm hard pressed to figure out how that passes constitutional muster, because there's already a body of constitutional law out there that says, listen, if you want to be a cop, you got to deal with the public, and the public is not always perfectly well behaved, and sometimes the public says, not nice stuff. So it's kind of a think of it as an alligator hide requirement for the police.
Yeah.
Now, how you can craft a statute that says that their tender fifis must be taken into account. I got nothing.
Well, unfortunately, from my understanding, this is another one of those Alec deals, and they're gonna do the same thing that they did with some of the other crap they've done. They'll sit there and they'll try in Louisiana. It won't work. It won't pass muster. So what do? They'll go and they'll rewrite it, jack it around a little bit, change the wording, and try to get some version of it passed until they eventually get it through there. And I'm hearing way too much of this, like I said, one of the downsides of this little restaurant I was in earlier today was it was run by a relatively elderly couple, and all over the place. They had a little coin collection box like you would see for a charity, and it says, contribute money, Blue Lives Matter, and this is the Police Legal Protection Fund. And I asked her about it. I said, what is this? She says, well, we're worried about the police being sued, all these Black Lives Matter people, so we're taking up a collection to build up a legal fund.
Those poor fools, they don't even understand that when a cop gets sued, it never even touches the cop, that's what they're paying insurance for. Jesus,
yeah.
God. As Arthur points out, yeah. John, he says, meanwhile, when the Cliven citizen shows up with the gear of a small army, the police plead with him, hey, guns do safe. Well, golly. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. I see it all the time. Well, there may be somebody else on the phone for you, so let me jump off.
All right, John, good to hear from you. Stay safe.
Control.
And remember, the latest polling shows Nevada turning kind of pink. So
this makes for an interesting piece of work. Now, being a truck driver, I don't maintain a hard residence. it's not cost effective for me because, you know, I come home every 6 weeks for 2 or 3 days and then I'm gone another 6 weeks. So why pay for an apartment? So I get mail at a mailbox. Well, because I can't, because a lot of times I don't get back to the mailbox, I've tried to register for 4 years now. I keep trying to register and I keep, you know, I'll put the paperwork in, then they'll send me some card or something. And if it doesn't bounce back within a certain period of time, oh, well, we had to take you off the rolls because you don't qualify for those, all this weird crap's been going on for the last couple of cycles.
I'll be damned. You're disenfranchised.
Like I said, since I don't meet the narrow qualification for a residency or something, I don't know. But we're trying again in a month. I'm going home and they'll show up in my local township office and
makes me wonder if our buddy Alan the trucker has voting problems. He's in Alabama. It's hard to imagine he wouldn't. Well, John, again, it's good to hear from you. You take care and have yourself a good evening.
I shall do so. I'm now going to get me something to eat. Thanks.
Bon appetit. Later. John, out on the roads of the wilds of the American West, somewhere. Another note that just to share with you, because oh my God, this is with the subject line. That one in the, this is a great Pink Floyd reference. That one in the spotlight. He don't look right to me. You remember that, right? Get him up against the wall. Against the wall. Well, Ray writes, the leading advocate for cleaning up our waters in Florida is the only protester to be physically removed from the local Trump rally yesterday. Cops dragged him out of the arena. Like I said, I don't think anybody down there is going to, nor will any reporters say, so how does it feel to know that you fucked your neighbor when you voted Republican? Nip! And let's run back over to the phones where, could it be? It's been a long time. Is that you, Andy?
Bob Kincaid.
Yes. Andy.
It's Andy.
Yeah.
Redwood City.
It was kind of a dead giveaway, the Redwood City part.
Yeah, I'm still here.
Excellent. So it's been a while. What's on your mind?
Well, the reason I called was I wanted to write up something. It was the show I have written down on June 23rd, and it had to do with the time when the Brexit vote occurred.
Yes.
And I was just kind of amazed with the tone of the conversation, if you remember back then.
It might be a struggle, but I remember some of it.
Okay.
And for some reason or another, I'm echoing with you, and I don't know why. But we'll try to get through.
Is it echo on the phone?
Well, I'm echoing back at myself, but we should. It's kind of faint. I don't think it's bothering the community.
Okay. Yeah, it's okay on my end.
Cool.
Yet, a lot of the conversation had to do with the racism that was involved with the UKIP party, if you remember.
Yeah.
A guy named Nigel Farage.
Oh, yes.
Who is a real way out there.
I think they'd give him a hood and a robe if he came over here.
Well, he's been over here. He's been stumping for Trump.
I know. What was it, Mississippi?
I think so. And certainly there was a degree of that in that vote, and I'm sure it's a percentage of the people voted because they are racist and they were anti the EU people, especially Polish workers and probably some Romanian workers who come in and undercut the British people that are there working. And certainly there is some of that. But maybe 15% of the voters or something like that. Just a guess. I've never seen any percentages. But a lot of it, I think, has to do with more so the EU is an anti-working class setup. It is a neoliberal project from the get-go. And the basic premise is you can't do Keynesian economics in the EU. And that's because they have the Maastricht Treaty, which sets up only 3% of government debt per year annually is allowed, and only 60% of debt to GDP is allowed. So the EU is an austerity project, which when they do get in trouble financially, which you've seen happen in Greece, austerity kicks in and it just, you know, kicks the rear ends of working people.
Yeah, not just Greece, Spain, Portugal, Ireland.
Absolutely.
Italy to an extent.
So you're getting a lot of, you know, in the UK, you know, Labour is a pretty strong party, and the Liberal Democrats were until they sided with the Tories. But I'm sure you got a good percentage of working class people who will normally vote for Labour or normally would vote for the with the Liberal Democrats who sided to get out of the EU because it's just not working for them economically. Our economy isn't working for us economically for a lot of people because of massive austerity as well here.
Well, right, and it damn sure works for Wall Street, though, Andy. And
it darn well does.
In the EU, it works for the massive banks. I understand that, but my point, if I recall what I said back then, is that when your allies are racists, it tends to taint the entire process. And
well, we don't have
a hard time understanding that with regard to Trump.
Well, it is the only vote they had to be able to get out of that. I mean, that's the way it is. And if it's not working for you, when the EU is not working for the average person, you're going to vote again. I just think it was totally predictable that they would vote themselves out of the EU. And then you got the whole sovereignty issue. And a lot of the EU higher echelon people are bought and paid for neoliberals. I mean, take the guy they have as president of the EU now, this Jean-Claude Juncker from Luxembourg. His big thing was tax loopholes for a number of corporations. He did a lot of these tax deals to save money for people like Apple, Google, and Starbucks, and Amazon, and whatnot. I mean, that was Jean-Claude Juncker, and here he is, president of the EU. And then you just had the scandal with that guy, with Jose Manuel Barroso.
Yep.
And he just went to be the head of international policy at Goldman Sachs or something like that, Europe.
It's nothing if not incestuous, Andy.
I mean, it's the same, incestuous garbage that goes on between Wall Street and our government, goes on between the head of the EU and the major banks. I mean, it's just a total neoliberal thing, you know, paradise. As far as policy goes, and these guys get paid off. You know,
and the problem is greater for countries, I think, that are lashed to the euro. It's not so. I mean, one would think it's not so much for the UK because the pound is still there, and that seems a better expression of sovereignty to me than some nebulous notion about whether or not Parliament can pass laws against polls. And by polls, I mean P-O-L-E-S polls. Because I found that kind of shocking, the backlash against Eastern European people. I'm where I am and who I am, Andy. I'm used to racism and bigotry having a skin color attached to it. Or, you know, a religious orientation, as we saw with the Skittles comment going back to the anti-Semitism of the Third Reich. So I mean, it's a little surprising. It was surprising to me to see the way that that Poles, Romanians, people from Eastern Europe were being treated. But the question remains: can they actually solve the problem by the Brexit? Because the people sitting in the Parliament are every bit as much, I would say, the majority of them are every bit as much the neoliberals as anyone else is. And of course, when this was all taking place and Boris Johnson was folding his tent and running away in a hurry, I remember the fun you and I used to have on the air talking about Boris. And it seemed like they drummed this thing up with a lot of feverish emotions. And then when they realized what they had turned loose, that 15, 20, or whatever percent it was, that turned out to be unreconstructed right-wing racists and bigots, they went, oh, well, you know, I mean, that's certainly not what we meant. I mean, does that make sense?
Well, I think the Brexit does have merits because of sovereignty. And having your own currency and not being part of the EU and being able to do your own monetary policy with interest rates is a big deal, too, which you can control your local. It's all control. And the smaller the entity you're controlling, the more chance you have of affecting your government the way you want it affected. If you're dealing with the whole EU entity itself, now the big gorilla in the room is Deutschland, is Germany. And Germany is a major benefactor of the whole EU setup because it is the powerhouse. And then you get some real right wing, like the finance minister of Germany, this guy, Wolfgang Schäuble, could be back in the Third Reich, for God's sakes, this dude. I mean, he could give a rat patootie.
And yet,
working class,
right?
People.
And yet, it took. I noticed the Berlin elections of recent vintage. It's not austerity that drove people to the polls, and handed a giant loss to Angela Merkel's Christian Democrats. It was the immigrant crisis. And so, and of course, the primary benefactor of that is the proto-Nazi rising right wing in Germany.
AfD, Alternative for Deutschland.
Jawohl.
Jawohl. Bring them back. Bring back them skinheads. Yeah, they got 14%, I think.
It was 14%.
Yeah.
And Angela Merkel, the reports I said said that she sounded the most conciliatory note that she has ever given in her years as chancellor. And that's a little bit disturbing when you're being conciliatory,
Bob,
to the Nazis.
Right. There's no question. When you're a working class person and you're seeing your wages go down, your benefits get cut, work hard to find, your lifestyle going down, there is a thing called supply and demand. And when you have an oversupply of workers, then you have a surplus. And the same thing goes in this country. We had 13 million workers get knocked off during the Great Recession when Mr. Obama came into office. And that was the workforce participation rate.
Yep.
That never came back. It's still down at that same participate. It was 66% before the recession. I think it's like 61-62% still now. The jobs never came back. And I feel that's one reason the Democrats are probably going to lose. And Mr. Trump keeps hanging in there because there is just enormous dissatisfaction. And when you see your lifestyle go down, when you see you can't make the wages you made, you can't get the work, you're going to lash back. And you're probably going to go to an extreme.
Right, and that's where that idiotic, asinine, head up her ass comment about deplorables comes in. It just drove me crazy. Because, you know, she did say, you know, half of them are deplorable. But now they're proudly wearing deplorable T-shirts.
Well, that's de rigueur for her. I mean, she can be an idiot at times, and that was an idiot statement.
Well, it absolutely was, but the point
that that should have never come across. Now, of course, people are not thinking straight a lot of times, but that was not, if you want to try to get them on your side, that's not the way you do it.
No, that was a dweeb phrase, okay? That was an attempt to burn, that was a match that was wet. It never even lit up. And she should not do things that she is not good at. But the point that I was reaching for there is that same level of disaffection and racism that we talked about being tucked away inside the Brexit vote is also undeniably tucked away inside of Trump's support. And
I think absolutely.
And if he gets
the same garbage here.
But the thing is, Andy,
like I said, jobs never came back. There are surplus workers there who have seen their lifestyle just plummet. You know, just to turn their lives just turn into a disaster. And what do? You lash back, and you want change.
But here's the problem:
real change, not the status quo that is Obama. That, quite frankly, I think has been a failure for working class people.
Doubtless much more he could have done, Andy. And I don't mean to overtalk you. The echo is a little bit of a problem. But let me just point out, and like I said, it's the same thing with the Brexit vote as what is happening over here. If Brexit succeeded because of, and it was a very close vote, we both agree, right? If Brexit succeeds because of the racists in your coalition, you automatically have a racism problem or a bigotry problem. And,
well, that goes without saying. A percentage of that vote was definitely racist.
But it's not. But it's not just that. It's
not all of it.
It's not just that a percentage was. It's that now you need them. And the same thing applies in the United States with Trump. If he's successful, it will be because a significant percentage, if not a plurality, of his voters were racists. And he's going to have them. And that means concessions are going to have to be made to them.
30% probably of his supporters are in that category. Sure.
And so if you have to make concessions to them, you get to ask, well, what sorts of concessions will those be?
Well, it's not going to be good. That's for sure.
And so that was why I was focusing on the race, I don't know what to call it in the case of Brexit. I used race, but race is obviously the wrong term.
Well, I just think it was totally predictable the way that vote went, and I think overall it's a backlash by working class people, a good portion of that, and I think even more than the racist portion of that driven vote, the Brexit, is just that people aren't doing well economically. You know, the ultimate thing is to hit somebody in the pocketbook. And working class people are getting hit in the pocketbook. But I heard a statistic, 65% of the U.S. population, working class, used to be in the middle class during the 60s. I think it's now near 40% now. You know, we've just seen a total demise.
It's not an accident.
Of the quality of life.
It's not an accident. But here's the
It's neoliberal policies.
But here's the problem.
A lot of those policies have come from Democrats.
Unfortunately,
and that
yes.
Democrat is Bill Clinton.
No getting around it.
Yeah.
Here's the problem. You know, we talk a lot. For instance, Thomas Frank, What's the Matter with Kansas? I know you read it, and his new book, Listen, Liberal.
I haven't read it, but I've heard Thomas Frank talk numerous times.
And he makes valid points. But the thing is, these people who are disaffected by the erosion of their economics and are now going to vote for Trump ostensibly because of it, are the same people that we have been talking about for 16 years, Andy, quote unquote, voting against their own interests. Well, now I guess they think they're voting for their interests because they've got, you know, a fascist Cheeto who's telling them he's going to be mean to Muslims. Now, how is that going to fix their wallets?
You know, at least if we had Bernie in there instead, I could say they would have something different to vote for. But with Ms. Clinton there, I can't say that it's definitely voting against their interest, because it's already been shown that life hasn't been good under Mr. Obama's policies. You know, and it's not going to be good under Hillary's, I don't think, no matter what she says, because she's a one percenter and she's a Wall Street. I just heard her Treasury Secretary is probably going to be Sheryl Sandberg, you know, the Facebook COO.
Yeah.
And she's an acolyte of Larry Summers, who used to be...
Again, with the incest.
...in there. Treasury, neoliberal, corporatist. You know, and that's what we're going to get with Hillary Clinton. We're going to get the status quo. Poverty has actually gone up under Mr. Obama. More kids are living with their parents who graduated from college under Mr. Obama. I mean, he didn't create enough jobs to even keep up, and this was by U.S. News and World Report, to even keep up with the new entrance to the job market.
I realize
and
that.
He is running around promoting the TPP and TTIP for Europe, running around like his life depended on it. And probably his corporate life as a venture capitalist, it probably does. But it will friggin' slaughter more working class people, and he doesn't give a damn. And that's what we have to look forward to with Ms. Clinton. His policies continued.
Right, because at this point,
people have nothing to look forward to.
At this point in time, they're only trying to maintain the stasis of the empire. Empires are not progressive entities. So, you know, the only reason we got FDR is because the country was on the verge of absolute social and political collapse. Had to try something different.
Right, the one percenters had a choice. Either you go along with Mr. Roosevelt, or you watch your patootie getting hung from a lamppost somewhere. You know.
Yeah, yeah. It was enough to engender the Bushes. It was enough to engender the Bushes and the other wealthy families to try to. I mean, you remember Smedley Butler to try to foment a coup against Roosevelt. That was real.
True.
And so my only argument, I'm not taking issue with your assertions, but my only argument is that maintenance of empire is what we can expect. And there's no reason to think that Trump will be he will be an idiot, and he will be violent, and he will be fascist, but it's still an empire underneath him. And the only thing that I would throw out, and it's not by way of a defense of Obama, but do you think it would have been any different if he had had a real congressional majority? I'm not talking about this bullshit majority that he was said to have had between 2008 and 2010. No, I'm talking, because remember how long we had to wait before they even gave Al Franken his seat? And even then it was a 60 vote Senate majority that was comprised of the Blanche Lincolns and Joe Manchins of the world.
Yes, but he showed that by putting Rahm Emanuel in his chief of staff, that it was going to be a neoliberal agenda for his presidency. And by putting in Rahm Emanuel, anything in a progressive manner was going to get squelched. And that was his choice. And then you watched the candidates that he backed. Did you see how hard he went after Alan Grayson to make sure he was snuffed out in Florida?
Oh, yeah. And Alan didn't do himself any favors either.
Right. Well, that was a smear campaign, you know, with his wife and hitting her and that sort of thing. I mean, that was a total smear. And now you got this guy who's basically a Republican, Patrick Murphy, who is going to be running and probably lose.
To Rubio.
Because he's got nothing to offer against Rubio.
To Rubio, who doesn't even know that he wants to necessarily be senator. Right.
Right, but he's running.
Well, because he wants to be president.
Well.
And you can't be president as a former senator.
Anyway, the point is they snuffed out Grayson. And Obama has snuffed out progressive after progressive after progressive after progressive. Like Joe Sestak in Pennsylvania running for senator against Arlen Specter. You had Jake LaMont running against Lieberman. Obama supports Lieberman, snuffs out LaMont, a great progressive hope. You got this guy Michael Bennett running in Colorado, a real 1% piece of scum who is supported by Obama. He knocks off a guy named Romanoff, who's a progressive. And then you got that Bill Halter race in Arkansas against Lincoln. Who does Obama support but Blanche Lincoln?
Right, and that's where we get the retards comment, courtesy of Rahm Emanuel.
Yeah, it's all about the status quo, the right-wingers in the Democratic Party, the neoliberal policies, continue on and snuff out the progressives. And that's what they've done, and they've been successful.
And they have been. And they're successful because of the structure of the campaign finance laws of this country, among other things.
And Debbie Wasserman Schultz with that Tim Cordova, another just heartbreaker. 60-40 she wins. Jesus, God, how could people vote for something like her?
Well, I guess they want to be able to get their payday loans now, don't they?
I guess so. And she is Miss Payday, Miss Wall Street. But talk about delivering to the Clintons. She delivered. She delivered to the party elite. And she still got her job. And the people still haven't woken up, you know, to really push. You know, the only time things are going to change is when people start losing their jobs like that.
Or we come
the progressive side, and it's just not happening.
Well, somebody reminded me of something a couple of nights ago. Can you imagine, or maybe it was last night, can you imagine if George Bush had gotten his way in 2005 when he said he was going to spend some political capital and piratize Social Security, and Social Security had gone completely in the can with the meltdown, the great recession would have been a greater depression. And that, you know, that might have been one of those transitive moments, Andy.
Correct.
But I think history shows us that the only time that you get meaningful political change in this country is when it's not when the shit hits the fan, it's when the fan gets dropped in the shit.
Yeah. Well, and that goes to your friend and mine, or you know her a lot better than I do, Kathy Malloy. Which I think brings up a great point. At least when you have Republicans in, Democrats seem to understand who the enemy is. When Democrats are in charge, they don't seem to understand that other Democrats can be the enemy.
Right, because at that point in time, it's majority maintenance.
Well, people seem to go to sleep. And not fight back like they did against Bush. No, there were a lot of demonstrations, a lot of people in the street during the Bush administration.
But you know what inspires me, if I can just be a little bit Pollyanna-ish, Andy? It was a lot of years ago now that we gathered together for Appalachia Rising to protest at Barack Obama. That gave rise to other war-based protests, and it operated on the Appalachia Rising model. And now you've got a humongous protest that takes place in the last couple of weeks in front of the White House over the Dakota Access Pipeline. I don't think people are afraid to protest a Democratic president. And I think they're figuring out that maybe that's what you're going to have to do. That's why I've said, regardless of what the outcome is on November the 8th, anybody who wants to protect what they have are going to have had better put feet on the street, regardless of who wins the election. And I'll even go so far, as to say, had the stars aligned and we had wound up with President Sanders, I'm pretty sure that we would have been organizing protests in front of the Sanders White House.
Hopefully. It's the only way things seem to get done to move the needle.
Yeah. Well, Andy,
it is... And that Dakota demonstration, was that at the White House? Are you talking about the ones in North Dakota?
No, I'm talking about the one that took place in D.C. A mass of people marching down the street.
And did you participate?
Your
people participate? The Appalachian?
I'm sure. Yeah, no, I know that there. Yeah, there were some. There were allies from Appalachia there. I wish I could have been, but I can't travel that much these days because the 8 campaign is brokered in the 10 Commandments. But you know, apart from, but I mean, I take great inspiration from that. And it grows, you know, and the climate movement is probably the single greatest social change movement alongside Black Lives Matter that this country has right now.
Well, I'm definitely heartened by the bravery and courage that those folks showed, you know, against those corporate interests, especially against those dogs that were let loose on them and whatnot.
Yeah, I was just surprised it was G4S security and not whatever Eric Prince's outfit's called now.
Yeah.
Well, it is awfully good to hear from you, Andy. Hopefully next time we'll get the echo thing sorted out. But don't be a stranger, okay?
Okay, I just happen to have a day off, so I've been wanting to get that Brexit thing. I just think I thought it was totally predictable and shouldn't have been a surprise, and I just think... Yeah, some of it is racism, but a lot of it isn't, Bob. A lot of it is just neoliberal, a backlash against neoliberal policies and working class people trying to get more control over their lives that they don't have.
And, you know, we had pushback.
Under the EU.
We had some gentle pushback at the same time from someone in the UK. Who made that point as well. So, you know,
That's good, because that's the way I read the Financial Times a lot, and that's the way I saw it, too, that they actually did get a lot of labor and a lot of, you know, working class people who are disenchanted with the whole way the EU has worked out in Britain, period. Just their lifestyles, way of life, quality of life, wages, benefits, the whole nine yards, the pressure on that is just down. And that's okay for the 1%, because theirs is up. But not working for the 99.
No, and we've got and greater minds than ours are going to have to find the way around that, because waiting around for people to suffer in agony is no answer.
We had it here during the 50s and 60s, right? More Keynesian economics and more economics geared to taxing the corporations and the rich more and providing more services for the working class that they don't have to pay, like free college education and things like that, and medical care.
And you wind up with an educated working class, and we found out how much the Republican Party despises that.
Yeah, that's true.
Andy, have a good evening, my friend.
They despise everything that the working class, you know that.
Well, they despise the working class.
Absolutely. It's a war out there, man.
It is. Take care, Andy.
All right, take care, Bob. Bye-bye. Thanks for letting me talk.
Oh, my pleasure. Our buddy Andy out in Redwood City. And we've got 10 minutes to go in the program and $350 in fundraising to go. So that means that if we don't take a big bite out of that tonight, then by tomorrow, the fundraising goal will be $550. So I'll just I'll cross my fingers. I had a note from Snork saying he wanted to... talk about the gyp stacks and the phosphate plant and the 215 million gallons of slightly radioactive water. So we'll see if he wants to jump in now. And I don't know how to put a fine enough point on it. I can't say it any more clearly than I did. If your coalition is comprised of any significant number of racists, bigots, and haters, you're gonna have to give them concessions if you win. And that should be enough to give most any of us the turtle squirts. And there is Snork. Hey, Snork. Oh, Snork. I hear you breathing.
Oh, hopefully you can hear me. I'm trying to turn my sound up.
Okay, now I hear you talking.
this phospho-gypsum, the stacks, the gypsum stacks that are down there in Florida, they're from what's called maritime phosphate. They're also byproducts of when they drill for oil. And a long time ago, they used to use this and mix it in with gypsum that was mined in the Midwest to get rid of it, because it was considered a bad product. They didn't want it to be called radioactive, so they gave it the term norm.
Norm!
And they give it all kinds of different terms. They call it tailings for one industry, and it's like whack-a-mole, trying to learn all the terms for things that are bad that get hidden. But it used to be used also as a filler for wall boards for houses.
Oh, yes. I'm well familiar with gypsum board.
So a lot of houses that... Well, the gypsum board that was radioactive used to be popular up until the 60s when it was pretty much banned as using it. If you think of it in terms of opportunities for getting cancer, normal gypsum gives you 37 opportunities per second of a chance to have cancer. Little radiation binks popping off. The stuff that's in those stacks has an average of about 851 opportunities per second for someone to get cancer. It deteriorates into radon, which people are familiar. Oh, radon.
Oh, bonus!
Don't want that in your house. The Chinese were caught within the last few years mixing it in with the wallboard that they sent over to the United States to replace stuff.
Well, and even when the Chinese weren't doing it, Snork, I don't know if you're aware of this or not, but we took to making it out of coal ash.
Yes, and we also use a lot of it is, well, the coal ash is mixed in as a bonus, and it's mixed in with gypsum that actually precipitates out of flue gas now when they make it from burning coal.
And that stuff, this was years ago now, but that stuff was causing untold problems.
Yeah, the stuff that's concentrated from flue gas breaks down to sulfur dioxide in your house as it gathers moisture. It causes problems with asthma and breathing issues and hearts. I'm thinking that I kind of want to do away with the wallboard altogether in the house anymore. And switch to melted pop bottles.
Is that a viable consumer choice?
As long as the plastic's not made in China, because they also mix phospho gypsum with plastic.
And what
China.
Are the chances of that in our global global trade driven world?
Yeah, you never know what's coming from China. Most of the places where I see they call it inert materials used in plastic is from toilet bolts. Or any kind of plastic that you want to look like it's really not translucent, they'll add it to that to make it look darker and not let light through it. And then, but it has the problem of making the bolt really brittle, so the toilet bolts don't last that long. You have to keep replacing them on your seats. But I just bring up the fact that it's prevalent.
I'll be damned, and I thought that was nylon.
Well, it's nylon, but nylon's expensive. Ground up rock, anything that they can find that they can grind into a fine dry powder that doesn't really take on moisture, they'll mix in with plastic.
cuts better living through the, chemistry, Snork.
It cuts the cost of the plastic by adding ground rocks. And if they can find a powder, like phosphogypsum, that's already almost there, it's that much cheaper for them to produce and add it as fillers to the plastic. And you can see, in it's common in many United States factories even used to use 5% filler. But you can see some plastics coming from China are over 50% filler. And you're wondering, why should this plastic not be soft? Why is it brittle? Then it's probably a filler that's been put in it.
Is there any way to protect yourself?
Well, it's so hard to figure out what's coming from where and whether the filler is inert or if it's radioactive.
Well, and the next question then comes from our buddy Randy in PA, who says, how does one go about buying a really good Geiger counter?
There's multiple types. The problem is you see a lot of people put their Geiger counters in plastic bags or a Ziploc bag. Alpha, the type that's bad inside the body but not so dangerous outside except to your eyes, can't go through plastic. The ones that'll detect gamma tend to be really expensive. Radon puts out beta and gamma, so you need ones that detect both of those. And you could be talking $400.
But at this point in time, isn't that $400? I mean, is it something? I mean,
the other thing is, once you
what about people's tap water in Brunswick, Georgia, and Savannah, Georgia?
Well,
do they need to spring for the $400 and just hold the little microphone looking hickey right there by the water as it's coming out of the tap?
It can, the background radiation whenever you're the first time you turn on a Geiger counter, absolutely frightens you for the next 5 weeks. But then,
We live on a radioactive planet. We're constantly bombarded with radiation. I get that.
Yes, the nuclear reactor that runs the world underneath us, the radioactive decay of everything in the ground below us puts out 2 terawatts, or it's equal to about 1,000 nuclear power plants. That's how much heat is currently given into the world by our radioactive stuff decaying by our feet.
And then there's the stuff that's just, bombarding us from outer space.
That's correct. We get a lot.
And that we call background radiation. But what about the 215 million gallons of slightly radioactive water? I mean, I'm not trying to scare people or give people a false sense of security. Is slightly radioactive water a problem?
I think we do have a problem with not realizing how much is around us, not realizing what things are a problem, that these things are often stored so close to schools. We have a government system that is built basically to make everyone seem like there isn't a problem by giving all these fancy names that the public never realizes. Oh, Norm, that can't be bad.
I mean, we wouldn't call it Norm if it wasn't. You're right. Well, Snork, unfortunately, we got to get out of here,
yep.
But maybe we'll extend the conversation. You have a good evening, my friend.
Bye.
Bye now. I love our conversations with Snork. Yeah, it is. It really is. It's time to get out of here. Thanks, everybody. Thank you. Thank you, Ralphs, for your challenge this evening. Thank you, Angelica, for responding to it. Thank you for our anonymous doubling down on it. That took $100 out of the hole. So we've got $550 to raise tomorrow for prayer meeting Wednesday. Whatever shall we do? I don't know. But thank you one and all for making this program possible and making this program worth the effort. Thank you, thank you, thank you. Thanks to our all-volunteer staff. Thanks always go out to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the men and women of Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net, and always, 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 Gina, it's all for you. Good night, y'all.